Blog Talk Radio.
It's a Christmas star, and that's all that matters tonight. Not bonuses or gifts or turkeys or trees. See, kids, it means something different to everybody. Now I know what it means to me.
That ain't the friggin' Christmas star, Grizz. It's a lighter in the sewage treatment plant.
Welcome to a very special Tuesday night episode of Movie Geeks United. Special because this one was added at the last minute because we have a spectacular guest tonight. And we managed to book him for tonight, and we know that everyone out here wants to hear from this gentleman. So we couldn't be more pleased to bring you the show this evening. I'm one of your co-hosts for tonight. My name is Jamie, and the other two movie geeks are here with us too, Jerry and Chris. Hey, guys.
Hey, what's up? Greetings. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Absolutely.
Have a holly jolly one.
How excited are we to talk about this movie in particular? Because we talk about it like it's a yearly ritual. Like, it is for so many millions of people.
Yeah, one of my good friends, her family watches this every year.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, definitely.
I watch it every year. In fact, we watch it while we wrap Christmas presents every year, and we've got that scheduled to do tomorrow night. And
oh,
I'm not
cool.
saying that. I'm not just saying that because he's our guest tonight. We really do that every year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never get tired of it, never.
It's always hysterical. And how satisfying, we'll find out, how satisfying that has to be part of something that's such a tradition in people's lives all over the country and all over the world. It must be fantastic. But we have some big shows coming up. We have a really huge show tomorrow night.
Yeah, the biggest one.
let me get this off right off the top of the show. We're going to be welcoming Jeanette Goldstein. And who is Jeanette Goldstein?
Vasquez,
in Aliens. She was also very memorable in Terminator 2, and she was in Titanic. And she's going to be joining us the first part of tomorrow night's broadcast as we reminisce about Titanic. You know, the occasion is, tomorrow is the 10th anniversary of Titanic's initial release.
Yeah, I am so old.
Yeah, so we're going to be examining what that whole experience must have been like. And then we'll be talking to the director of the hit Disney film Enchanted, Kevin Lima. Then we'll be welcoming director Andrew Jones and actor Glenn Turman, who's great in The Wire, by the way. They're promoting a new film called Kings of the Evening. Then we'll be welcoming the author John Gaspard. He wrote two books, Fast, Cheap, and Under Control, and Fast, Cheap, and Written That Way. They're kind of guidebooks to producing low-budget films, for producing and writing for low-budget. And then we'll be welcoming Michael Mays, the co-star of National Treasure 2, the Book of Secrets that opens this weekend. That's a packed show tomorrow.
Yeah, you couldn't get more packed.
Man, I'm going to be exhausted. And then once I get some sleep, we'll be back on Sunday.
You'll be hibernating.
That's right. We'll be back on Sunday where we will welcome legendary director John Sayles to the program. That's going to be an exciting one right there. His new film is called Honey Dripper, and it's a great film with Danny Glover and Charles Dutton. It's a great movie, and I can't wait to discuss it with him. And then I heard from our Sundance people today, and we got some exciting guests lined up for leading up to Sundance as well, some of the competition filmmakers in this year's Sundance. So looks real promising for the next week and certainly the next month. Okay, guys, you guys ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's get right to it. This is the time of year that movie geeks all over the world inevitably turn to a few tried and true film titles to get them through the stress and chaos of the holiday season. We turn to our holiday favorites, of which there's about a handful. It's A Wonderful Life, A Christmas Story, White Christmas, Scrooged perhaps, but no matter what, no list of holiday film favorites could possibly be complete without National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, the third Griswold family odyssey starring Chevy Chase, Beverly D'Angelo, Randy Quaid, and a cast of truly beloved character actors. Written by John Hughes, this holiday classic is directed with tremendous warmth and energy by a remarkable filmmaker we are proud to welcome on the show tonight. Jeremiah Chechik has shown chameleon-like skills as a film director for nearly 20 years, producing work as varied as Binny and June, Tall Tale, Diabolique, and 7 episodes of this year's television event, The Bronx is Burning. It is our pleasure to welcome Jeremiah Chechik to our program. Mr. Chechik, are you with us?
I am with you, and thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being with us. We cannot tell you how excited we are to talk to you about this great movie.
Well, it's always funny to talk about a movie that when you made it, you had just no idea that it would be the way it is now.
You really didn't, huh?
Well, we didn't. All we knew is that we were thoroughly amused in making it. We laughed a lot when we were cutting it. And, you know, we're kind of pretty happy with the end result when we first screened it in the initial tests. But, you know, and when it became a hit when it was initially released, we thought, well, that's it. You know, it'll, you know, nice for this season, well and gone. But it's just been kind of one of those oddly semi kind of memorable films, both for me and for everyone that I know.
And like we said at the top of the show, this movie has become tradition. I mean, you heard Chris; he wraps his presents to it every single year. I mean, it's absolutely a part of so many lives this time of year. But this was your first feature film.
Yeah, it was my first film, and it was an odd film for me to get as a first film. I was kind of surprised that I was actually even offered this film, since at that point in my career, I had been a fashion photographer, mainly for Italian Vogue, and I had come back to New York and was doing a lot of commercials, in the tradition of kind of, you know, dark, sexy, moody, musical, that
right.
kind of thing. And I always thought, well, my first film is definitely going to be a noirish kind of thing. And oddly enough, I was asked to do a film on the Apollo Theater and started to develop this. This was at Amblin with Mr. Spielberg and Kathy Kennedy. And they had sort of taken me under wing. I had never made a movie before, but they were fans of my commercials, and they started to kind of embrace the kind of sensibility that I had, and they were making that movie, or were planning to make that movie, with Warner Brothers. And I got to know the guys at Warner Brothers, and the Apollo film was... It became, for me, I wanted to make a small film on the Apollo, and Warner's wanted to make a huge star-driven movie on the Apollo,
right,
and
right.
we had a falling out about that movie, but Warner's wanted to give me a movie, and so they just sent me a whole bunch of scripts, most of which I thought were dreadful, and I had no idea that they were, you know, they sent me one script, and they said, oh yeah, Clint Eastwood, he's going to do this movie, and I read the script, and I said...
There's no way.
There's no way Clint Eastwood is going to do this movie, and he did it. It was, I forget what it was now, but like a really, you know, not Clint's kind of most memorable work.
Right.
Pink Cadillac, I think it was called.
Okay, so you got out of that one. That's good.
Yeah,
that's
I said, there's no way Clint Eastwood's ever going to do a movie like Pink Cadillac. Anyway, they had sent me their slight. One of the things they had sent me that I really loved was John Hughes' script for Christmas Vacation, and John Hughes was, you know, at that moment in time, he was a giant, you know.
Oh, yeah.
he had been a real kind of provocative cultural icon at that time, and was kind of taking me under wing and going to basically produce the movie.
Mm-hmm.
What that did for me is give me a tremendous amount of power. Even though I hadn't earned any of it for myself, but he gave me a lot of power, because then as soon as he said, he's my guy, you know, you got to listen to him to the studio, he went off and started to make Uncle Buck.
Oh.
So he left me with all of this fantastic kind of personal power to deal with Christmas Vacation, and so whenever the studio wanted to make some changes, I'd just say, yeah, I'd love to, you know, check in with John, make sure he's okay. Well, then I immediately phone John. I'd say they want to do this, and he'd say, I'm not taking their call. Right, so
oh, that's great.
On we went, and you know, the the process of casting it was really, really fun because, you know, I have to tell you that I have never seen the first two Vacation movies, even to this day.
Oh, really?
Well, I never wanted to see them before I made my movie because
right.
I never considered it to be, in fact, a sequel. It was never really written as a sequel. I don't know if you know this, but it was written initially by Hughes as an article for the Lampoon, a short story. And then he adapted it as a screenplay, and Warner's, brilliantly so, thought it would play as a great sequel to their franchise at the time. So he adapted it for that. But it was a standalone movie. I mean, it didn't really need...
Well, you can tell that today, too. I mean, obviously, the Griswold family were part of films before that, but this one really stands on its own.
Yeah, and I felt I didn't want to really be influenced by the previous films, you know, for better and worse. I think they had kind of fallen on hard times anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And thought I would just do my own thing. And to that end, you know, I had Chevy, who was attached, and Beverly, who was attached. And, you know, I had met with Chevy, and it was fine. I didn't really know that much about his work since I wasn't really at that time even a fan of broad comedy as a director. I really had no idea why they gave me this movie. You know, I eventually asked them, I said, why did you ever give me this movie? They said, because you shoot pretty pictures and you're funny. Okay. It's fine with me. I had already made the movie.
Well, you talked about John Hughes. And I just want to backtrack a minute. You know, he was so influential in that period of time, and he's kind of a mysterious figure now. You don't see him very often. And I'm just wondering what that experience was like. You say that he was very encouraging, but what kind of collaborator is John Hughes?
Well, I mean, he is and was a very, very complex figure, you know, brilliant, brilliant writer, very stylish and very fast, just in terms of his facility with words and sensibilities and personalities and that kind of thing. He's very much active today, even though you wouldn't know it. He rewrites scripts, and I would imagine he's a highly paid kind of rewrite person.
Right.
But I don't think he really needs the kind of hassle of Hollywood, as it were. I mean, I think he really was his own guy and wanted to just make movies his own way.
Yeah.
You know, his influence on me was, I thought I would learn quite a lot by just observing how he kind of approached his work, and I spent a few days watching him work when he was in production before I started. But he was just very, very laid back as a director, I really learned more about comedy from watching the way he cast, and certainly from his writing. That was the thing. In other words, I really learned to squeeze every bit of comedy out of a line. And to that end, I would always try to beat every line like a dead horse until I just couldn't do it anymore. And
so,
I always figured if I laughed, somebody out there would laugh. That was always the way I kind of tailored my response as a director. Because remember, when you're doing a comedy, it's just you and the cast. And when you've rehearsed it and done it, and you know, it may not feel that funny to a lot of people, you know,
yeah.
Like Grip standing around, kind of the board leaning on the lights, you know.
Yeah, it must be difficult after a while to gauge what's funny and what's not anymore, yeah.
Well, I just figured if I laughed, I thought it was funny. End of story. That was it.
Right.
So that's how I played it. Though there were some scenes that are obviously, they were really, really funny when we read them, funny when we were blocking them, super funny when we shot them, and when we cut them, they were really, really funny. And a lot of them had to do with Randy Quaid's cousin Eddie and Chevy's chemistry.
Yes.
Randy, who is just a brilliant, brilliant actor, both dramatically and comedically, was just a dream. I mean, the whole cast was great, and I worked hard at trying to pull really solid professionals into my family. I mean,
mm-hmm.
You know, like William Hickey, you know, is a giant of, you know, he's dead now, and he's a giant of the theater and of of the education of actors in New York. He's very legendary. He played the uncle, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, of course.
He's hysterical in the movie, and I wanted to ask you about him because he's always been, and this is about 3-4 years after he really made a comeback with Pritzi's Honor. I mean, he's a powerful.
That's right. And I just wanted to work with him, and I kind of offered him the part, and, you know, he said yes. You know, E.G. Marshall, another, like, giant actor, you know, through the 40s and, you know, the classic era of Hollywood, and John Randolph, who was blacklisted. These are, for me, they were legendary actors, and I just wanted them to surround me and really kind of embrace my sensibility, which they did. Mm. You know, Johnny Galecki, who, you know, is, you know, awesome, you know, in the body of work. These are serious people, as we've seen from their 20 years of work. Johnny came, he was a kid, but he auditioned, and he was just, like, absolutely great. Mm. Juliette Lewis, I think this was her first film, and she just came in and just struck me as kind of sultry and sullen and kind of sexy in a weird way. And,
yes,
you know,
yes.
I just just completely, you know, in a way, miscast to be part of the Griswold family. And so I cast her because I thought she would be kind of interesting. And, you know, and so the interesting kind of connection and chemistry between all these people really, really was part of the energy that fed me because, you know, in the movie, which I haven't seen for a while, you know, I'm the only one who doesn't watch it every day. I feel like, oh, that's weird. It's like looking at your own picture or something. But I think there's a lot of scenes with a lot of people in it.
Right.
And those kinds of dynamics are really, really fun to do. But, you know, overall, I try to focus a lot on, believe it or not, on the characters and the heart of it, because I felt no matter how funny it is, if it didn't have heart, it really wouldn't stand the test of time.
Yeah, it's got tremendous heart. And the thing about the character of Clark Griswold, too, is that he does have heart. I mean, he wants to do the very best he can to impress his family and give them an impressive time. But what was it like? You talk about these great actors together. Did they feel like a family after months of being together? I mean, were they?
Yeah, dysfunctional family. I mean, there was a lot of chaos on the set. You know, there was a lot of strife initially between Beverly and I. Mm. And, you know, it's funny because I think maybe 2 years ago we did an anniversary DVD of the film, and we all got together and we were narrating, and Beverly and I just got on like a house on fire. We were joking. She was going, "Oh, I treated you so terribly." Oh, yes, you did, but I was back at you. You know? You know, I don't know at the time how she was feeling about doing this role, but she, you know, she was quite nasty to me initially. Mm. And so we really were like sparks, her and I. You know, I had given her some direction, and she really kind of put me down in front of the crew saying, like, you know, I've never directed a film. What right did I have about, you know, to give her any direction?
Oh, goodness.
So I basically said, "Oh, you know, you want to play that way? That's fine. That's fine." I did the whole scene, and I covered everybody, and I got everybody's kind of two shots and close-ups and everything. And when I came to her close-up, I just looked at her, and I went, "Moving on." She basically freaked out and said, "You can't do that. You need my close-up." And I said, "I don't need anything from you. I'm going to cut you out of the movie." And so,
oh, goodness.
Then she
see, and this is the kind of behavior that we hear about from Chevy Chase, or that I've heard previous directors say about him. But
well, what happened then, of course, was because Beverly was nasty to me. But then I, you know, I got her in line. She was great, and then we got on. Then she would fall out, and all of that. By the way, I have to say that that's why I preface this. Now we get along great. So.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
But at the time, it was, you know, it was kind of crazy, and it was my first film, so I just really had to. I'm very not intimidated by actors, so I'm really in their face. Mm. So what happened was, because she was mean, the entire cast kind of congealed around me and started to be mean to her, which didn't serve my purpose at all, because then Chevy was really nasty to her. And, like, so they would, like, be, like, just basically almost spitting at each other before takes, and then, boom, they were there. And this thing kind of went in and out of scenes, like, but they were, like, they were so good, you'd never know. I mean,
yeah.
You'd never know watching it.
Isn't that amazing? And you hear that sometimes from film sets. I think the most famous one is probably, you know, Gone with the Wind. But when the two of them are together, I mean, it's just...
No, they're there because they really
yeah.
kind of sublimated to the character, and they
yeah.
leave it all behind when you say role. And, you know, to that end, that's really terrific. And so, you know, all's well that ended well, of course, you know, at the end of it, when we all got to the end, everybody was like, yeah, we really love you, man. You know? But, you know, it was pretty challenging emotionally for me, but... I when I think back on the experience of doing it, I really, really have very, very fond memories of the direction of the movie and the kind of how I felt about getting to work every single day. I really loved it.
Yeah. Why do you think it survived like it has?
Well, I have a notion about it, and I think that notion really had to do with how... I mean, I don't want to blow my own horn here, but I just want to explain how I prepared for the movie, and maybe that had something to do.
Blow your own horn. Come on.
Yeah, come on. It's
your
movie. It's your come on.
Anyway, the you know, before I did it, I looked at a lot of Preston Sturges movies and a lot of Billy Wilder, you know, a lot of Howard Hawks, and you know, I really tried to kind of embrace the classic approach to comedy. Wherein the meat of the movie, funny or dramatic, if you weren't with the characters, the movie wouldn't basically last.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's my problem with many movies now. You know, there's some fantastic eye candy and very well staged movies, but at the end of the day, you walk away and you go, what do you feel like, Indian or Chinese? You know, you're not really talking about the movie.
You're
the
right,
movie.
Yeah.
And so when something strikes you, you carry it with you. And I really wanted to try and instill this in what was quite a broad script. And so I worked really hard at those small moments with Chevy that were not funny, that I directed in a dramatic way so that you felt... that he felt very, very much pained by his lack of being someone or what he expected to be at that moment in his life for his family. This is something that is very, very relatable to a lot of people. You know what I mean? You have expectations in your life. You have a family. You think you can do this. You're going to get the bonus. You're going to support them. You're going to build up whatever it is, whether it's a middle class or working class or even on an emotional level that you can bring something. And so I really tried to bring the tragedy, but of course balance the fact that it's tonally in a comedy and worked with my instincts on that, but I really paid attention to that in every single scene.
Yeah.
And I remember the first preview screening of it, and I was just terrified because I realized that, you know, we were previewing a film, and, you know, I'd cut it and mixed it, and it was all temp scored and whatnot, and John Hughes had flown in from Chicago, and all the heads of the studios were there. And for them, it's kind of a normal thing, but for me, it was my first movie, and I thought, oh, my God, if this goes south, I will never direct again. This is terrible. And I was just apoplectically nervous. And Terry Semel, who's running Warner Brothers at the time, who's great, a wonderful guy, up to recently now running Yahoo, but just a really smart guy and a real gentleman. Anyway, he decided he was going to sit right next to me for fun, right? And so Terry and I sat and we watched the movie played, and it started out, there was the first few shots, and in the audience, everyone started laughing. There was no jokes. It was not supposed to be funny, but people started to laugh. And I went, wow, this is really interesting. And the movie picked up steam, and it started to play, and it was people are laughing in the right moments, and we're very, very focused on, if the audience laughs a long time and steps on a line in their laugh, we extend it out. You don't really get that feeling when you're not watching it in a crowded theater, like on DVD.
Yeah.
But when you're previewing a comedy, especially, you want the rhythm of the laughs not to overstep the next lines, and if the laugh is short verse, whatever, you shorten it up. It just plays better. So you're really focused on that.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew that the movie was playing was really, really funny, but I still didn't know to the end, because very, very often, you have a comedy that plays very, very funny, and it sort of lands in a lame way. People walk away, and it sort of does okay, but it doesn't do great. It's whatever. But there came a scene, a very important scene to me, when he's out there and he's trying to plug the lights in, and he's like, just does this enormous kind of build up, and he slams the plugs together, and nothing happens. And so he does the scene, and the entire audience at one time groans.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. And I look at Terry, and Terry looks at me. And at that moment, I knew that I had a movie that was going to be a hit movie.
Because they feel it. They're in
yes,
it.
Because people were with his journey. It wasn't about the laughs. It was they cared.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. And it taught me a lot about how to invest that kind of thing. And in drama, I try to invest a lightness to the drama, the flip side, so mm-hmm. that it's not all Sturm und Drang as it is.
Well, I know that you also did Benny and June. And,
mm-hmm.
and before you leave, I want to ask you a question about that. That's another exceptional movie. And you got to work with Johnny Depp,
mm-hmm.
way back when. And tell me about that experience, and if you kind of knew that he would peak to the level he's at today by watching him then.
Well, I'm still friends with him, and Johnny has never changed. He's the same guy, He is a true artist, and he recognizes material and artists, and he likes to work with his friends, and he is very giving, and, we had a notion on this movie to try and do something tonally. I always really, I was a fan of his from the, from the beginning. I never think about if somebody's going to be, big, small, or indifferent. I don't really, that's not part of my thinking. To be honest, I always thought that he would always make choices that, and I think he would probably say this, that would prevent that from happening.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he was early on, a little sex symbol on TV, and he hated it, and he didn't want to be objectified like that. And, he's a very serious artist, and he really likes that kind of outside work and character. And so, his choices would be defined by the material and the kind of stuff that happens. It's amazing that, in a way, the culture catches up with Johnny, not him with
true.
The culture. And so I'm not surprised, because he's an enormous talent and very charismatic and a wonderful, deserving person. But I wouldn't have expected just naturally that the culture would have caught up with somebody as quirky as that.
Though, yeah, I'm sure everyone is as shocked as he is.
Yeah, I think
he's
surprised too, but it's not because of the talent. It's
because
of his expectations and what he wants to do and what he's tried to do. But working with him was we worked obviously very, very closely on this, and it was a very very difficult movie to do tonally. Although it was not a difficult movie to shoot, because we were all quite enamored, the cast and the crew. We all had an amazing experience that was not unlike the movie you see. We were most surprised that movie really hit a chord, and in a way has lasted and become a somewhat of a cult movie too. I'm kind of very proud of it.
It is. It's great. I mean, it's astonishing that you're part of you know, for anyone to be part of just one film like that is amazing. But
hell, I could die now, right?
No, you're not going to do that.
I
understand that you're shooting a television series now, or what's
last year I actually did 8 episodes, all 8, and I produced 2 of the Bronx's.
Oh, all 8 of them.
For some reason, IMDb says there were 7, but there are 8, and I did all. We shot it as an 8-hour movie and then cut it up into a series. And it was about the 1977 Yankees. And,
yes.
Again, very quirky, very unusual, very strange, and very, very, very strong, dramatic, very dark.
And another outstanding cast, too.
Yeah, amazing cast, and they were unbelievably good. I mean, my thing is working with really, really good actors.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's what I've done. And, you know, I've shot a few pilots this year as well. We're finishing a pilot right now that is one of the strangest. It's a television pilot, but it's extremely strange. It's a cross between a live action Thunderbirds, like the puppet Thunderbirds, or the Prisoner, or the early Avengers. Like,
really?
A very surrealistic.
Oh,
that's
awesome.
I feel like they're taking more and more with their narrative shows. They're taking more and more risks with content on TV now.
Yeah, well, what's happening, one of the reasons that, I mean, you could never make a Benny and June now for a studio. You can never do that. They
right.
just don't want to make those kind of movies. So, you know, with me, I like to change it up. You know, I really like to never do the same movie twice and never do the same kind of thing. This year, after The Bronx is Burning, which was very heavy, dramatic, I did a broad half-hour comedy pilot, which has been picked up. And it's kind of like Get Smart with a band. It's very great. And that'll be going into production as soon as the strike is over.
Oh, that's great.
And the one that I'm doing now is written by a writer, Javier Grillo Marxovac, who was one of the writers on Lost, one of the main writers on Lost, and is based on his graphic novel comic book called The Middleman. And it's available on Amazon. It's really, really a very odd, surreal thing. And these are the kind of things that the film studios are very reticent to make, these kinds of things, unless you have a major star. And often the whole point is not to have a major star, to bring the absolute right actors
right,
to this.
Right.
And that's why it's often better to do it for a reduced budget for television. You get a huge audience, and it's a lot of fun. So, you know, while I have some movies that probably will go into production after the strike, which could be any time in the next
year. Yeah,
do you
get a sense of when this might wind down and all?
I do not, and nor does anybody I know.
Yeah.
It is a very nasty and horrible, bitter and rancorous negotiation, if at all, because they're not negotiating anymore. And being a member of the Writers Guild as well as the Directors Guild, it's very complicated. They're both, you know, you guys are making a podcast, so you obviously have some understanding of
right.
media.
Right.
Both the Writers Guild and I believe the studios don't really understand new media. They really are focused very much on the pay-per-view, you know, package good syndrome. They don't realize that it's a buffet style out there, and it has to at least feel free, if nothing else.
Yeah.
You want to encourage people to consume, use, experience as much media as possible, and then figure out how to divvy it up.
Yeah.
They don't get that. So
yeah.
I think they're writing bad code that will eventually crash their system. So whatever.
That's the smartest thing I've heard on this so far, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, that's putting it pretty succinctly.
You said it perfectly.
Yeah.
I think I did.
Yeah,
I don't celebrate it, you know.
No, no one does, but that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Well, when these shows come to fruition, when they're about to come out, will you come back and tell us all about them?
Oh, yes, I would love to. You guys are really, really fun. Your show is great. I know it. And, anything to kind of keep the flame burning in visual media, I'm there. So
that'd be great. We would love to have you back, and we thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Yes, thank you.
And sharing your memories of Christmas Vacation. What a great film. So
thank you
so
for having me, and I hope to see you soon.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
That is Jeremiah Chechik, great director, great movie, Christmas Vacation. I think we all can agree.
Yeah, we can.
One of the classics. Here's a little trivia for you right before we go. You know the house that they use, the Griswold house?
Yes. I heard about this.
It's also the Murtaugh house in the Lethal Weapon movies.
Wow.
Yes.
No, this is one of those movies that it's like when you're building a DVD collection, sometimes you'll be in the video store or Best Buy, and you're like, you'll have a DVD in your hand, like, should I buy this, should I not? Christmas Vacation is one of those movies that no one ever holds in their hand and says, oh, should I buy this or should I?
You see it, you pick it up.
Yeah, if you don't have it, you pick it up, yeah.
That's how I was when I bought it. And when I used to work at a video store that shall go nameless, I worked there for years, and around Christmas time, we would, like every video store, get in boxes and boxes of Christmas product. You know,
right.
We would get new, more rental copies of Christmas movies and more sale copies of Christmas movies. And,
right.
You know, we would get extra copies for rent of It's a Wonderful Life. You know, you get a couple copies of that and Scrooged. But every year we would get probably, I'd say, about 10, maybe 12, even 15 rental copies of Christmas Vacation. Because, and I'm not exaggerating at all, because every year, invariably,
people steal them.
They would rent out every year.
Yeah.
All of the rental copies would rent out, and if we had any for sale, they would sell because people would come in every night around Christmas time, and it would be like the movie was a new release. There would be as many people asking for Christmas Vacation as there were people asking for whatever was the hot new release at the time. Every night.
We're going to close up in just a minute or so, but we have a caller on the line. I want to give them a chance to chime in if this will work. I'm trying to work the control. It's not working to unmute them. They might be gone, and their number is just not gone from my screen because I'm trying to unmute them, and it's not working. I'll keep trying on that. But an incredible movie, and surprising that Chevy Chase was the one he got along with.
Well, I think it's still at that time he was probably, you know, it wasn't, I guess, like the last couple of years, but definitely at that time he was still, like, riding high, Fletch and other movies, so he was doing well. The press hadn't soured on him.
Yeah, yeah. And I think this is Mel, Mrs. New Orleans in the chat room.
I think so, yeah, because she's
on the line. I don't know if you're still on the line or not. I'm not able to unmute your call for some reason, so I apologize for that. But what a treat to talk to him. And we tried to get him on for Sunday's show, but he couldn't, so we had to. He's going away starting tomorrow, so we had to add the show tonight. We're pleased to do it. Speaking of tomorrow night, a big show.
It's the longest day.
Titanic 10th anniversary. National Treasure 2, Enchanted. These are movies you're going to get the scoop on right here. I mean, Enchanted, a huge movie, like the big movie of the season, probably.
Yeah, it is.
It's a big family movie this season. And then Sunday, John Sayles in January, Sundance, Dolph Lundgren. I mean, come on, Dolph Lundgren.
I don't know what to say. I just hope we get to talk about I Come in Peace.
You could
exactly. I was asking Jerry about that. Or I was asking Jamie if he'd ever seen that movie the other day, and he didn't know about it. You've seen that movie?
Yeah. I saw Universal Theater in the theater, and my brother wanted to leave immediately. I can't. I don't know why, but
the whole movie, I guarantee you, the whole movie, I Come in Peace, was based around that line of Dolph Lundgren's at the end of the movie, where he says, you know, where the alien says, "I come in peace," and Dolph Lundgren says, "And you go in peace."
That's right. That's right.
That they built the movie around that?
That's my theory.
I think Chris is right.
Huh. The new news about the writer's strike is that there will be no writers for Golden Globes and Oscars.
Well, now, for the Oscars, isn't it for the whole Oscars or just segments of the Oscars? I wasn't sure on that.
Well, with the Oscars, they've even refused to give them clips for all the nominees. They can't use clips.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, wow. Dude, whoa.
Yeah.
Which, again, I think possibly just that it might make it more interesting.
It would streamline it, like you said.
Yeah. I think that it might be, I don't know if better, but it'll be different at least. And that's what we've every year we say, oh, they got to do something different. I think it might be an interesting change.
Let me ask you this. Do you think Jon Stewart would still host it?
I think if they if they're going to have a host still, they're lucky that they signed on Jon Stewart, because I think he's the kind of guy that could improv, although actually the kind of person you would want up there hosting if they could do it last minute is somebody like Robin Williams.
I'm sure that Jon Stewart, though, is in the Writers Guild.
Yeah, because I don't know if he's going to cross that line if this is still going on.
Yeah, who knows? They might have to get somebody up there that can really, like, do it on their feet and just come up with stuff. And, they, you know, of course, who comes to mind?
Robin Williams would be there.
956, go right ahead.
Oh, hi, it's Mel.
Hey, Mel, how you doing?
Called in, great.
It took me a minute, but
for some reason I couldn't turn your line off mute, but now it's working. What can we do for you?
Yay, is your guest still on?
No, he left about 10 minutes ago.
I'm sorry, Mel.
I tried calling in on time. I couldn't. I've been trying to get ready to go to sleep and everything. But I want The Christmas Vacation is my all-time favorite movie, and I was 20 minutes late coming to the show because this stupid thing didn't send me my email telling me it was time.
Oh, I'm sorry. But the good news is that he will be listening to the show. I'm sending him the link tonight. So you can go ahead and express everything you wanted to right
it's
now.
It's the best movie ever, best Christmas movie ever, 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 ever is National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Ever.
It is true.
Ever. And Clark is my dad.
Well, my apologies.
Like him. It looks like
lot of,
him and everything.
I think a lot of people feel that way. That's kind of why it works. Everybody can recognize that, you know, their dad was like that, want to make it so perfect.
Oh, my husband's that way, too. I'll tell him, I'm like, what's up, Clark W. Griff? Every time Christmas rolls around, he's on the roof putting lights in the house. I'm like,
So is it a movie that you find yourself watching every Christmas?
Oh, yeah. I got it on DVD. I have it on tape. I have it on everything.
Yeah, it's a must watch every season.
It is.
All three of us are the same way.
Yeah.
But thank you, Mel, for calling in.
Thank
we
you
appreciate
very much.
You listening.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm sorry it was late.
Anytime.
Right.
No, that's fine. You got your message out there loud and clear, and he heard it.
He is heard. He will hear it.
So thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
It's great to hear from our wonderful callers.
Yes, it is.
Especially when they're not prank callers. It's great when you pick them up.
Yeah,
It's not a prank caller.
It's been a while, though. It's about time for us to have another prank caller, though.
Come on. With all these guests tomorrow night, don't tell me that.
Don't,
man.
Please. Please. No, we can't have that.
Okay. So join us tomorrow night, 10 o'clock, big show. Please come
on. 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock. You're right. It starts an hour early. It's so big.
It's big, dude. It's the longest day, man.
It's a 2.5-hour epic. You know, it's going to be an exciting one, too. I think a lot of Titanic people are going to show up because it's posted all over their message boards. Mm-hmm. There's still a major Titanic presence on the web.
Oh, yeah.
Fans that, you know, visit and chat on chat rooms, you know, every day for 10 years.
That's true. It's the movie that was sort of like the dawn of the internet age. So,
like the romantic Trekkies, you know. I don't
exactly.
Okay. Well, thanks, guys, for joining in tonight. And thanks, everyone out there, for being on the chat room and being so active and listening into the show tonight. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern. Okay?
Good night, everyone.
Good night, guys.
And this here's our pride and joy, Snot.
Pretty name, Ed.
Yeah, we named him that because he's got this sinus condition. Snot, you roll over and let Uncle Clark scratch your belly.
You ain't never seen a set on a dog like this one's got, Clark.
That's okay, Eddie.
That's something, ain't it? You pet him, Clark, on the belly, and he'll love you till the day you die.
I really shouldn't. My hands are all chapped.